Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Sonia Watson. Sonia is a suicide survivor and a mental health advocate who's here to discuss how we can have meaningful conversations about both suicide and mental health. And I think these conversations are especially important because if we're not talking about them, we tend to ignore them and nothing seems to really get better when they are ignored. So without further ado, I want to welcome you to the show, Sonia. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. When we first met and we started just real brief, getting to know each other a little bit, your story just seemed to kind of resonate with the types of things that we talk about on this podcast. And I know your story doesn't necessarily come from a veteran's perspective, which is a lot of what we talk about here, but certain topics like suicide, mental health, other things like that for years and years have just sort of been taboo and like people didn't want to really talk about those types of things. It's almost like we just brush them under the rug. They'll go away if we don't talk about them. But if we don't talk about them, then like I said earlier, I don't really see how we can make them any better without bringing to light some of the issues that are going on. So that's why I'm really excited to have you here, because it seems like that's really in your wheelhouse. Like what you are doing is really bringing this up and talking about these hard to talk about issues and really helping people get to the core of what's going on with all of this, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, 22 veterans die of suicide every day. That's one every 65 seconds. And I feel like, especially people in the military, they give their lives to service. They're there to protect. They're there to help. And so sometimes when I work with veterans and I have spoken to them, they think, suck it up. I'm tough. I'm strong. I'm serving. I mean, what they do is incredible. But nevertheless, their mental health is just as important. And I think oftentimes gets neglected. Now, the government and people are doing more programs for them, which is amazing. There needs to be more done. But, you know, even, you know, me, who hasn't dedicated my life like they have to others and protecting others, but I still hid my mental illness for over 20 years because of the stigma, because of the shame. And it got to the point where I wasn't really getting the help that I needed. And so I swallowed over 100 pills of my antipsychotics in an attempt to take my life. And so what I would encourage the military, and that's even their spouses. I've talked to them too, their spouses. It's a family thing that they're dealing with, that it is courageous to speak up. We've got to change the dialogue. If you are brave, you are courageous, and you are strong. And the more they do it, the more other veterans will come forward or even active duty.
That's true. When you start talking about this, when you start talking about this in a way that encourages people to get the help that they need, it becomes almost a snowball effect where one person looks at it and is like, okay, well, I guess it's okay to talk about this now. We've kind of accepted this. And then the next person, oh, well, okay, well, that's something we can talk about. I guess we're cool with this now. We're talking about this and we're doing this thing, right? But I know even, gosh, a little over 20 years ago, there was a TV shows and things like that where people would talk about going to a therapist or something along those lines. And people would look at them like, oh my gosh, are you crazy? Like, what are you thinking? Like, why would you go and do that? And you fast forward to now and you see these conversations, like the one that we're having right now, and it's a complete 180 from where people were back then. And if that wasn't even all that long ago, if you think about it, right? Some of these television shows made jokes about this type of stuff. Like it was something funny when you're talking about someone's mental health and someone's well-being. It's like, you wouldn't make a joke about cancer or about someone who was in a car accident or something like that. Just, it's not funny, first off. Like, and second off, it's not productive. It's not helpful either. So now we have this little change in the way that society is looking at this stuff. And now it's opening the door to having these kind of conversations where it's a little more productive, and it gets us to a point where we can actually make some sane, rational decisions about what's going on in the mental health space in this country, right?
Yeah. And I think it's also one thing, it was really neat. I went for this lady, Reigns of Hope in California. She has where veterans and active duty come and do therapy with the forces. And we were talking to their staff, and there was also some veterans there. And as he shared his difficulty in with his mental health, it made other veterans feel comfortable. And so, like you said, this conversation is gotten better. There's a long way to go. But as every person speaks up and makes themselves vulnerable, which is takes a lot of courage, then the next person can come forward and talk. Like when I was taken to the hospital where my husband was currently CEO, and a leading psychiatrist there told him, never bring her back to this hospital again. Take her to a hospital where people don't know you. So even the psychiatrists, right, know that there's stigma. And what's unfortunate, I know his intentions were good, but what it could have been a learning moment to say, hey, even the CEO's wife, right, just attempted suicide. Let's have a conversation. Let's come forward. And so I think that's what's got to change. Because as long as suicide kills conversations, it's going to continue to kill people. Yep. And so I think what's so critical for the military and government and people who are supporting them is to have these open conversations so we're not having 22 veterans die of suicide every day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's one of the reasons why I started this podcast, because I've personally known several soldiers who served with me at one point or another who either committed suicide or were on that brink where they were suicidal and they were about to, had they not had some sort of intervention from supportive family members or other people in their lives, then that number of people who actually were successful in committing suicide could have been even higher. And thank God it wasn't higher. But to me, this conversation is just so important because it opens up this door to let people know that it's okay to get help. It's okay to talk to people. It's okay. And it doesn't matter what walk of life you come from, whether you're a lower enlisted person in the military, all the way up to high-ranking officers like generals and things like that. It can affect you. It can affect your family. It can affect the people who are around you just the same as it can anybody else. And I think you're a good example of that, because not to necessarily shine the spotlight on your situation, but you know, it, on the outside looking in to your life, it would seem like, well, you got everything going for you, right? Your husband's a CEO. You got your pretty successful. It should be a fairly happy life, right? And why, what went wrong? What happened? And it's obviously something was there, and it's something that wasn't being addressed. But to someone on the outside looking in, they may not realize that there was something going on at that point, right?
Well, exactly. So I appeared to be living the ideal life, married to the hospital CEO, 3 beautiful children, a beautiful house, attending charity events. I would go to the psychiatric hospital, spend a week there, go to church the next day. No one knew, not anyone, not even our church leaders, not my friends. I kept it a secret because I didn't want the stigma, right? You're crazy, you're weak. And people at church would be like, how are you? And I'd be like, I'm wonderful. It's great. Even though behind closed doors, obviously my life was holding darker storylines. And I was like walking on broken glass. And so a lot of us put forward this front, right? Until obviously I got to my breaking point and attempted suicide. And then all my neighbors, right, saw the ambulance, meet my body taken out on a stretcher. Then the secret was out. Right. But we have to have these conversations about your mental health. And what I would encourage people, when you start feeling like your mental health isolating, sleep changing, eating change, thoughts and sadness, that those are a little alarm bells of saying your mental health is saying, pay attention to me. Because just like your physical health, your mental health is just as important. So you may be working out and getting really fit, but your mental health is just as important. And if you don't take care of it, your mental health is going to keep pounding on that door to you saying, pay attention to me. And we've got to do that. And a lot of people in the military also go through a lot of experiences that cause a lot of trauma. And how does someone process that? And when you have those experiences, they do need therapy. They do need somebody to walk them through that, to heal from those things. I mean, they're putting their life on the line and their families are sacrificing. So it's not just the military women and men going out, but it's also the families.
It is. It's a group effort in a strange way, right? The service member, yes, they do put themselves in harm's way very often, whether they're deployed or even in training exercises. Things go wrong in training exercises all the time, and they could see things or do things that will affect them. It will traumatize them, and they bring that home, and now the families are dealing with that. Or even if they don't bring it home, while they're deployed or while they're out on these training exercises, the families are home worried. What's going on? What's happening with our loved one who's deployed overseas or who's off on this week or 2 week long training exercise, whatever, and will I ever see them again? And that takes a toll on the families as well. So you're right. There's a lot going on with all of that. So I guess the biggest question that I have right now is, how would you suggest that we start having these productive conversations about mental health, about suicide, about these tough topics that a lot of times traditionally people didn't want to talk about? They just swept it under the rug or pushed it down. Where do we get started? I know conversations like the one you and I are having right now are a good place to start, but just for the people listening, where can we get started with this?
People ask me a lot of time, I'm a big mental health advocate and I do a lot of advocacy work, but the best type of advocacy you can do is right in your circle of influence. So whatever military families you are with, around your friends, start with your own voice. So if you're having suicidal urges or if you're having mental health challenges, share that with your fellow veterans or active military friends or your wife, or the wives should be talking, or when you go to dinner with your couples or your families, have these conversations. So if you want to make the biggest change, like I know I've been reading some articles, some things the government is starting to do for military families, and I think that's wonderful. But what I really think is most powerful is any military person or any military family member listening to us right now, you can make the most biggest impact more than any program. Speak to the people in your circle, your families, your friends, your children. Open up the conversation. And that takes courage and vulnerability. And that is the number one thing. Is because then imagine if everybody's doing that, then it just spreads like wildfire, right? Throughout all military's families. So I know military moves a lot. Every time you move, you know what I mean? Share, even if you have recovered. Even if you've gotten through it, share, say, hey, this is what I went through and I got through it and I'm stronger and it's okay. You will get through it. So even if you have moved past it, it's just as important for you to share your success story.
Exactly. And that's what I do a lot on this podcast, is I have people on who've been through different struggles. It could be mental health related struggles, could be homelessness or substance abuse, and I know a lot of those things are all tied to mental health and everything, and that's fine, but they've overcome the issues that they were dealing with and they've made it through that dark time in their life and they are now leading happier, healthier, more productive lives. And for exactly the reason that you just said, it's there to serve as inspiration or to give hope to the people who are listening, to let them know that someone else has been there and done that too. And while you may seem like all hope is lost and that everything is all doom and gloom and everything, there are better days ahead. You just have to work through this tough time and you'll get there, right?
Yeah. And I always like to tell people, how you're feeling today, you won't always feel this way. And even with the joy, life is up and down. We have joyful moments. That's how we know we're alive, is that we have difficult and hard moments. So when you're in those hard moments, know these feelings will pass. You will not always feel this way because no feeling stays forever. And I have mental health challenges that's for a lifetime. So mine's biological. Mine's not even environmental. So mine's for life. And I have them all the time. But when I'm having a difficult moment, I always know, okay, it's going to change, just like the weather. The sun's going to come out. And then you embrace that. But I also wanted to tell you one other thing that people have done that have found really helpful. And I'm not doing this to sell books. Just buy one and pass it around. I always tell people, I want to see how many, one copy of my book, how many people it can get to. But my book, An Impossible Life, you can get it on Amazon, and it's the Eric Hopper 2022 grand prize winner. But you know what? One thing that some veterans have done, they've had book clubs. And I know this sounds crazy, but they do. They have family book clubs, or even the wives, and they buy one or two of the copies. And if you can't afford it, reach out to you and I'll mail you one. You pass it around and read it. And then reading my story, tipping the scales at 250 pounds, going on an epic manic episode of $150,000 in worthless items in 3 months. My dad died from suicide. I attempted suicide. And you see how it affects the whole family and how we get through it. Sometimes talking about somebody else's story kind of opens the door for you to talk about your story. Yeah. So this is why I opened myself up. I'm no longer hiding. I want to be the story that you guys, I'm being vulnerable. I lay it all out there. Take my story and have it be the starting gate. I've made myself vulnerable to discuss me, my family. You can have all these inputs of my mental health challenges and how my family acted and how they responded and the pain and the joy. And there's even some funny stories in there that maybe that will help you open up to talk about your own story. And so And if it's not my book, or go find another book, but I find that's very helpful. If you're feeling like, I'm not ready, I'm too scared, go get a book and read somebody's story, have a book club and start talking about it.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah, it does. And that, I think, is a great way to dip your toes in the water, where you're maybe reading somebody else's story, whether it's your story or another story that's out there, the similar things that you might have going on in your life. And that's also part of why I do what I do on this podcast and sharing these stories.
You're doing. I applaud you. I love what you're doing.
Thank you. But you're right, because it's so much easier to talk about
somebody else,
what that other person is going in. And you hear about it all the time when someone has that quote unquote hypothetical question for that friend that they know. And it's really, they're talking about themselves. Yes. Hypothetically, if I had a friend that was dealing with this, what would they do? Like, clearly they're talking about themselves, but when you make it about somebody else, then that conversation works a little bit easier, because you're not necessarily admitting it's you that's having a certain problem, right?
Right. And it's funny because I get emails from a lot of people, and I've had some people say, I'm not alone. I read your story. I have mental health challenges. I feel suicidal. I read your book and I was like, I'm not alone. I feel what you feel. Yeah. And they didn't know how to quite explain to their family members. So they just handed my book to their family members and go, read this. This is how I feel. And then I've gotten emails from family members going, my eyes have been opened. I did not realize what it was like. You opened the door for me. And so it opens a conversation sometimes between families when we read about somebody else or hear about somebody else's story. Because being vulnerable, like, I knew I wasn't ready. For 20 years, it took me to get ready. So I understand it's a journey. And I understand there's a lot of people listening to this that aren't maybe ready. And it's a personal journey. But nevertheless, I would say, keep taking that faith and that step forward, and just put one foot in front of the other, that there is hope. I am telling you, if I can do it, anyone can do it. Anyone.
Yeah. And I like what you were saying earlier, and I want to circle back to this, about the spheres of influence that you have, those little groups of people, the pockets of people, your neighbors, your coworkers, your other family, and things like that.
Most powerful.
It is super powerful. And I might go off on a little tangent here.
Yeah.
Bear with me here. But there's a book called Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah.
And in the book, he talks about this teenager in, I think it was Micronesia or someplace like that. And this teenager got into an argument with his father. And eventually this argument escalated and he got to the point where he hung himself, and the kid killed himself, right? And at that time, suicide was almost unheard of in that area. But then after that event, it became extremely common. It more and more people, it was all teenage kids who were doing this. And so over the years, it got to the point where I want to say it was somewhere around like 8 times what the rate was in the United States. Like it was just a super high rate. And while that might be all interesting, I guess the point is that the book goes on to talk about how these social epidemics that take place, like the suicide problem or teen smoking in the 90s or 80s or whatever, right, here in the US and other things like that, oftentimes are driven by what they call salesmen in the book. People who make that negative behavior seem to be almost glamorous, like Marilyn Monroe after she killed herself. The suicide rate went up in the US by, I forget what the percentage is, but it went up like a high amount because you had this influential person. And it's like, well, if that person can't deal with whatever it is that they're going through, then clearly I have no shot, right? But when, if you were to take that argument and flip it around, and now you see, now we have a strong person that I know, this guy who's in the military or woman who's in the military, who's super strong, super fit, seems like they're tough as nails, anything, they could deal with anything. And here they are going to get some help. And it's like, okay, well, if they can go and do that, if they're strong enough and courageous enough to go and do that, then maybe I am too. Maybe I can do that, right? And so maybe we can flip this conversation around just by being that example. We talk about leadership in the military all the time, being that leader who leads by example and shows other people that it's okay to follow the same path, right?
Yeah, they've done studies, and anyone, especially in the military with leaders, that if you make yourself vulnerable and say, hey, I am struggling with some mental health challenges and give examples, that will make other people feel comfortable in talking about it. But what's incredible, I think it was like 65% of people within their circle in work, military, wherever, if they feel like there's conversations happening, 65% of people said they were more apt to go get help. And you think like, well, why would they just go get help anyway? You know what I mean? Why do they need other people to encourage them? But yet, like what you were saying, tipping point, or we are influenced by each other and we have to admit that. And so in the military, when you say, I love that, lead by example, I hope everyone listening to this, even their wives or partners or husbands, lead by example with them and have those conversations. Be a powerhouse. Be a powerhouse and be like, I will not be ashamed. I will not apologize. I am brave. I am strong. And I am human. And I'm a person. And mental health challenges are part of everyone's lives. But like we talked about in the military, you guys are a certain unique type of people doing unique jobs. In my opinion, and stuff I've read on you, I think you need even more support with your mental health because you're taxing your physical health a lot, which influences your mental. Or then your mental and physical are tied together. And so an incredible amount of service, and I don't want to get emotional, but just service, and just you men and women, you are precious. You are precious. And what you do is so important, but you need to keep your mental health well so you can be of greater service. And
yeah,
you got to take care of yourself.
That is the point right there, I think, that a lot of people miss, because they think if I go and talk to somebody, I go get counseling or whatever that they might need, well, that's taking away time that I can't be focusing on leading my troops or doing other things that I should be doing and everything like that. But when you're running on empty, you're just running on fumes, and you're not taking care of the things that you need to be taking care of, like your mental health, you're not going to be operating at your peak potential. So yeah, take a little time, take some time, go get the help that you need, get your mind right, get your body right, get everything going right. And then you're going to be able to operate at a level that you probably couldn't even imagine before. Right?
For sure. And the other thing to realize is if it gets ignored, it will catch up with you. Yep. Like I did that. It catches up with you. So now that I have taken care of my mental health, therapy, medicine, support system, if somebody would have told me 10 years ago, Sonia, you'd be speaking to veterans, people in the military, Fortune 500 companies. Your book, An Impossible Life, would be an Eric Hoffer 2022 Grand Prize winner. You would have published articles in the Washington Post and The Hill and Miss Magazine. I would have said, you're lying to me. You're lying to me. I was in bed doing nothing, barely functioning. And when you take care of your mental health, I loved what you just said. You will be stronger and better than you can even imagine. And I love that you said that because that's what I have found true for myself. I am doing things that I never thought I'd be capable of. I always thought, well, my mental health is a disability and it's just going to hold me back. But what you said is more true, that if you take care of your mental and physical, you will be greater than you even possibly think you could be. And so I love that you say that.
Yeah. And something that you said earlier too, about how people, like, it doesn't make sense that people wouldn't go and get the help that they need. A lot of times it's very erratic. Some of these, like I was talking about before, these social epidemics that take place, right? And I think veteran suicide is probably classified as one of those types of things, because I mean, 22 people a day losing their lives to anything is a huge number, right?
Oh, every 65 seconds.
Yeah. It's too much, right? And, but if you think about other things that are negative, like I mentioned, like teen smoking back in the 90s or whatever. Back then, everybody knew that smoking was bad for you. It was well publicized. There were posters all over the place, schools, the Dare Say No to Drugs and the smoking and all that. Like, it was well known. Right. But again, it's irrational. People were doing it because they were following in the footsteps of the influential people in their life, the quote unquote cool kids who were doing it, right? Well, if they're cool and they're doing it, well, then obviously if I want to be cool, I got to do that too. So that it is just irrational. And so sometimes you might have to think outside the box on how you're going to get people to move in that right direction. And if we start doing things that are irrational, like talking about our own mental health and the issues that we're having, sometimes that might seem irrational because it's like, oh, I don't want to come off as being weak or crazy or anything like that. Well, maybe that might just be the thing that tips people in that right direction to get the help that they need.
I love what you just said there too, about how people think it's maybe weak, right?
Yeah.
And what I would love to see, not just in the military, but everywhere, that getting help is a sign of strength. Because I loved what you said there about not wanting to appear weak, not wanting to appear like maybe they won't get promoted up the ranks, or maybe they'll seem like they can't be a good team player. But if we can change that stigma into getting mental health help is a sign of strength, is a sign of courage, is that maybe, you know what I'm saying? We need to change that shift. Because I really agree with you that a lot of people aren't doing it because they don't want to appear broken, weak, maybe scared of, I'll get passed for that promotion.
Right.
And so, when you said that, it made me think of something that we have talked about, that let's change it to it's a sign of strength to get help.
Yeah. And to take care of yourself, right?
Yes.
I think the whole point of this, and if I could maybe just put it into military terms that the people who are listening might be able to wrap their heads around. When you're in the military and you're deployed, you're in a combat zone and you get into a firefight, and one of your people on your team or in your squad or whatever, they get hit by some enemy fire or whatever, and they're injured and they're laying out in the open. You should know this. If you were in the military, you probably know this. You can't go and run and go help them right off the bat. As much as you might want to, just go and grab them and drag them back behind cover and help them, give them first aid, whatever it is that you can do for them. You might want to do that. But guess what? Whatever shot that person is now going to be aiming at you too. And then you're going to be no good to that person who's laying on the ground. You're going to be laying right now down next to them, and you're going to be no good to them if you just run out and try to help them. You should know that number one priority is the security of the situation. You make sure that the threat is either eliminated or is retreating or something like that before you go and help out that person who is injured on the ground, right? And so if there's somebody else who needs your help and you're not going to be any good to them because you're not taking care of yourself, then you're not really helpful in that situation. So you have to be quote unquote selfish a little bit and take care of yourself in order for you to be able to be there for the people who need you, the people who are on your team, in your squad, in your platoon, whatever level of leadership that you have. There are always people who are counting on you. Even if you're the lowest ranking enlisted person in the unit, someone is relying on you to be there to provide cover fire in a certain location or something. And if you're not there, if you're not there mentally, you're not going to be able to do a good job.
And I'll make myself vulnerable in a situation because this is a great conversation. So I'm a mother as well to 3 children. And because I didn't get help and I attempted suicide, the doctor saved me. I got to the point where they're like, you're in no shape to be a mother. So my son at 16 left home, went and moved in with my husband's brother in a different state to finish high school. He left his tennis team. He left his church friends. He cried. And that's a consequence of my choices of not getting help to the point of almost taking my life. And then I didn't get to finish raising my son. So, and my husband almost divorced me because it's taxing on the partners. And what you're saying is so true. For you to do your job as a husband, as a mother, as a friend, as a daughter, as a son, in the military to each other, you owe it to them and yourself to take care of your mental health. Because your example applies not just to the military, but to anyone. Because you can't be there for the people. I paid the consequence. And my son and I have had to go to therapy. Our relationship is so much better now, but it's still a work in progress.
Sure.
So, yeah. And again, if you have been through things like that, if you got a divorce or there's certain things where you're like, oh, my mental health got that I wasn't there, share those too. Mm-hmm. Because then maybe it'll encourage other people. And that's the reason why I'm sharing my story and why I wrote my memoir, right? An Impossible Life, is to say, look at my life, look at my choices, look how mental health affected me, my husband, my children, my sister, my mother. And hopefully we'll let people know you're not alone and to get help.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know you briefly mentioned your situation where you ended up in the hospital. And that's the spark that started this whole journey for you, right? Where your life was saved and then you started on this healing journey. But if you don't change your mindset after something like that, you're not really going to find that life is still worth living after that, right? And clearly you have had a mindset shift that has given you this gift of these extra years and all this time that you now have and the advocacy work that you do and everything. What was the spark for you that let you realize that life is worth living and that there is more to life than whatever these temporary problems might be?
Right. I think a lot of people, and probably in the military too, who has faced death or almost died, for the majority of people, it's kind of a huge wake-up call of like, I almost just died. And I knew the truth needed to be told. I was done hiding. I think it was just this culmination, losing my son after my attempted suicide. My husband was going to divorce me. It was just like, I hit such a rock bottom sitting in that ICU. My husband said, we're going to separate. I'm going to divorce you. The doctors, you're in no shape to be a mother. Your son's moving to Utah. I was unconscious in the ICU. They were fighting to save my life. When I woke up, it was like, you almost just died. Your husband's divorcing you. And you're not fit to be a mother and your son's going to Utah. And so I also loved what you said, because something my therapist said, I had 2 choices. I could quit or I could find a life worth living. So I love that you said that. My therapist said that to me, that Sonia, you can create a life worth living with mental health challenges. It's possible. And I didn't believe her, but I stepped forward in faith. So I would say anyone listening to our podcast, listen to you, right? You said create a life worth living. Listen to me who's done it, that it is possible to have mental health challenges, to come out stronger, and to still create a life worth living. there's a life worth living with trauma, with pain. We all are wounded inside. I know some of the military are wounded on the outside with scars from battles, but there's also inside battles and wounds and where we have been in battle for our lives, for our happiness. And you can come out a victor. Yeah.
For sure. And it seems like a big part of that is finding a purpose, finding a meaning for your next day, to the thing that will get you out of bed the next morning, to get you to put that smile on your face and get yourself out of bed and get yourself moving so that you can have a positive impact on the world. And whether it's the world, the whole world, or if it's just your own little sphere of influence, you get up and you do something and you have this positive impact. And that seems like exactly what you're doing. And what I would encourage people to do is find that thing that gives your life meaning, that gives you a sense of purpose, a sense of direction. Because I think once when you've found that, then so much good will come from that.
I love what you're saying. And I would tell people to be patient, because it took me a while. My attempt at suicide was 6 years ago. So just realize it's a journey, right? We're all on our own personal journey, and just embrace it and find your purpose, what you said, but allow yourself to explore and take time to do that. There's no rush.
Yeah. Exactly. So your book, again, An Impossible Life, that's a part of a series. Is that correct?
Yes. So An Impossible Life is my story. And then you're going to love this next title. An Impossible Wife is my husband's point of view, because it can be challenging being married to someone with mental health challenges. So it gives my husband perspective to try to help those whose partner. And then my daughter, An Impossible Childhood, is being written right now about what it's like to be raised by a bipolar mother. And then my last book will be A Possible Life, that will have us, right? That we're on this podcast. We'll have all my journey of what you said, creating a life worth living. So the last book is A Possible Life, showing how I did create a life worth living. And that's being currently written too. So I love this, speaking to you today, because you have said so many things that my therapists have said. So anyone listening to your podcast should continue to do so, because I find it so interesting that you have a lot of wisdom. Yeah.
And I don't even get paid for this. So this is just a labor of love, right?
Yeah. Wait, look at your sphere of influence. Look at your purpose. Look what you're contributing. And so, yeah, I mean, what an honor to speak with you. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. And again, you said the book is available on Amazon.
Yeah, it's Amazon, or you can order it. It's online, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target. Excellent. But most people go to Amazon. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I will have links to the book and a website where people can go to find out more about the upcoming books, because
I have other series,
a mailing list.
Yeah. Or if there's a spouse out there, they may like bypass my book and go straight to my husband's An Impossible Wife.
Sure. Sure. Because I think all of those, and I love how it kind of comes full circle with the series of books. And so encourage people to check them all out. Maybe one of them isn't necessarily right for you, but I think at least two of the four of these books are going to be right for you. So definitely check those books out. And again, I'll have links in the show notes for all of this, so you can check those out.
Yeah. But, and I just want to say one thing. If you do end up purchasing a book, after you read it, pass it on to someone else. My goal is, how many people can read one copy of my book? Keep passing to people. That's the whole reason I do this, is just keep passing that book around and tell them to pass it on, and pass it on, pass it on.
Yeah, pass it around until the book is worn out.
In shred. Yeah.
But that's great. And I think a book like this with such a powerful message, powerful story in it, is worth a whole lot more in the hands of somebody who needs it than it is collecting dust on a shelf someplace in a house or in a wherever.
So yeah, I agree. And even some people, what they do, they write a little message of hope inside my book and pass it on. And then I've had people write messages of hope in the book that they keep passing on, so that other people can read. Like, you're not alone. I have been through mental health challenges and I've overcome. Or some people have wrote an inspirational quote. So I love that too. Like, I've seen some people write little messages and they pass it around. So it's been, I love it.
So it's like the book just gets better and better.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's great. Yeah. Well, Sonia, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
Thank you
again for joining me and taking the time to share your story with me and the audience.
Well, thank you so much for doing this podcast to help people. I mean, bravo to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.